Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up at 10:15, Flashpoints continues their investigation into the Lyme disease epidemic with a series about the failure of government agencies to address this health crisis, the widespread underreporting of the epidemic, and a new kind of activism that's emerging from sick patients who have been crippled by the disease. We'll also hear an update on the situation in Gaza. At 11 on stage in studio, host Dimay Roberts talks with director Kevin Jones and actor Chantel DeGroat about August Wilson's The Piano Lesson, which is about to open at Portland Playhouse. And we hear about the August Wilson Red Door Project, an organization with a mission to change the racial ecology of Portland. And at 11:30, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear a program from the Catskill Review of Books featuring award-winning journalist Jess Bravin talking about his book on the Guantanamo terror courts. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre following this announcement.
2 years ago, Portland lost a musical and cultural icon with the passing of Ghanaian master drummer, bandleader, and teacher Obo Adi. His contribution to the raising of local knowledge and appreciation of African music in general, and Ghanaian music in particular, and his tireless work with local youth cannot be overstated. As part of our fall membership drive, KABU is proud to present a celebration and retrospective of Obo's work on Thursday, October 2nd, from 1 until 4 p.m. Musical offerings, remembrances, and interviews will be part of this important figure's legacy. Join Andy Hosh and DJ Charlie and others at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 2nd. The preceding hour, from noon until 1 p.m., will be filled with Ghanaian music as part of DJ Charlie's regular World Beat Connection time slot. See you then.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, September 16th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web, Radio Benghazi. Today's guest is Noel Hanrahan with the Prison Project and co-host of Mumia Abu Jamal, still a voice crying in the wilderness of the American prison system, the gulag of the 21st century, where it is made manifestly evident that what we're talking about here, yes, of course, it's racism. But it's a little bit deeper, and to say that we're staring racism right in its cold, dead eyes is ridiculous, because we have yet to confront the issue of slavery. And I have been thinking about this a lot recently. Others have been talking with people about this, and it seems to me that that a form of slavery is still in force. It is enforced in many subtle ways, in the low wages, the no wages, the disgraceful numbers of young African-American males who are in prison, which excludes them from the regular economy, what's left of it, and subjugates them to this kind of limbo, netherworld, where employment is almost impossible to find, and that people find themselves instead working for pretty much nothing, and at the behest of the vast power structure that rules their every move. Escape from that gulag is pretty much impossible, because we're going to go straight before we hit a couple of other topics here. First, we want to begin talking about that right away. I want to welcome Noel Hanrahan to the KBOO airwaves once again. Good morning, Noel. Thanks for being with us on short notice.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
Well, I saw this piece. I heard Mumia speaking about No Escape and the fact that prisoners are exposed to toxins, which the rest of us would not be facing on a daily basis. And it made me think, well, it was slaves who were forced to work under in conditions that were lethal. And there are so many other aspects of growing up African-American male in America today that resemble slavery a little bit too closely. But we don't talk about that because we talk about racism, which indeed needs to be talked about. But I would like to re-examine the heart of the matter. Could you kind of recap the exposure piece that Mumia did and talk a little bit about the conditions that that shackle African-American males, and particularly people who've been to prison?
Oh, you know, it encompasses many, many different levels. And part of the level is the historical legacy of slavery. I mean, the fact that millions of people were transported over 300 years to this country, a colonized nation, and it was a slave trade. That's one aspect. The other aspect is how then this country has conducted neocolonialism, where they have taken the urban labor pool, which was probably lacking of jobs when the industrial transformation of the American urban centers took place, and in fact incarcerated them. I mean, targeting African Americans and people of color as a surplus labor pool to stick in prison in a way that was dramatic and planned. So we really have an extension of the slave trade, and it is in our Constitution. I mean, the slavery was not abolished. The 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution says slavery was abolished except when duly convicted of a crime, except when imprisoned. Any country.
There you go. That's exactly it. That's
right. Any country that has this level of incarceration, I mean, we have the highest incarceration rate in the world. We have over 2 million people currently incarcerated, 7 million under correctional control. One out of 46 people are going to do time in our lifetime. So it's
just give us the numbers
defining.
Again.
It's culturally defining, and it's a lot.
Could you read the numbers again? Give us the numbers again, because
one in 46 people in this country are going to do time, prison time. One in 99 are currently in prison. That means we are in an incarceration state. We are in a culture that prioritizes incarceration that's criminogenic. This is not what other cultures do. This is not. I went and got my master's at Boston University, and I tried to understand it, but we weren't studying other cultures. I mean, really, honestly, this is criminogenic. This creates crime. The kinds of social policies we institute are planned, and probably planned in terms of the surplus labor pool and for capitalist's sake. So we have to seriously look at our priorities and our values, because we're spending more money on prisons than we are on schools. And when you do that, you really create a lot of problems. So it's been endemic to this culture, this community, this culture. The wealth of our nation was created on slavery. And so we have to really look at how the historical context and the contemporary context, and it's really about our kids. It's about our children's access to schools, and it's about our children's, you know, potential imprisonment.
And the persistence of this, and the fact that it's, Americans find it difficult to talk about racism, and virtually anyone that you might ask would claim, one of my best friends, is black. That's what you hear, because that deflects any serious or deep historical consideration of the conditions in which this huge swath of our population now exists. What you just were talking about, the criminogenic conditions under which people live. If under slavery, doing anything other than what the slave owner demanded was a crime. And we still have those kind of conditions today, where pretty much every move a person makes, if they've been in prison, that is a crime. And it nothing is done to address that. We talk about racism, we talk about incarceration, but let's get back to the issue of how slavery persists in our culture today, and it's so deeply entrenched. How do we go about addressing it? We don't even talk about it. Are you there?
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, no worries, no worries. If we don't talk about something, if we don't, how do we begin to address this? If we don't even talk about it, this is incredible to me. We should be talking about this. The economic servitude that meant that so many people find themselves facing when they get out of prison it would appear very, very similar, maybe not equivalent, but a little bit too close for comfort. How do we go about addressing it if we never talk about this?
You know, I think honesty and really keeping our eyes open is super difficult in this culture. And so everything and every time we see the disparities and we feel them, we need to talk about them. Now, that's uncomfortable. It also makes you a target. People don't want to actually be accountable to sort of the injustices that we see every day, but we have to. In order to change society, we have to take some risks, and part of that is standing up and talking about what's wrong. So on a daily basis, I see things that are really disturbing, and being open, like having your heart open enough to actually acknowledge that they're happening, that's super important because it's painful. It's painful to people that it's happening to when we see... Oh, like I'll tell you a quick little story, okay? I'm trying to buy a house in Philadelphia at one point. I try and go set up and I have my young African-American son with me, and I go to the bank, and I'm trying to set up a bank account. And I just talk to them, and I say, okay, ultimately, a couple of years from now, I want to buy a house in this community in Philadelphia because my grandparents live there, and we're going to live near the grandparents. And they say, oh, no, you don't want to live in this community. And I'm like, excuse me? And they're like, no, you want to live in Mayfair. You want to live up there. And I'm like, what? Because I'm a little white lady, you know, and look, sitting down in this bank. And they say, no, there are too many black people here. And I look at this one white person in the whole bank, the rest of the people of color. And I look at her, and I look down at my kid, who's African American, in the stroller. And I think, are you kidding me? Did you just say that to me? I just was like,
in earshot of the rest of the people. Did other people hear this?
No, they didn't hear it. But I went to the bank manager and I said, I just need to talk to you because this is unacceptable. I mean, come on, man. This is just like any time that something happens that we see, it's uncomfortable. My family had banked, my in-laws had banked at that bank for like 100 years. Okay? So it was like, and the neighborhood had changed. It was much more people of color, thank God, because I want to raise my kid there. But now I wanted to live in Frankfurt, man. You know, I really wanted to live there. Or when so my house got shot up in San Francisco, and I was living there. And the police came out, and they said, what the heck are you living here for? And I'm like, I live in Bayview Hunters Point because people live here. And they're like, no. Why do you live here? We just let these people shoot each other. It's not very good to be up here. I'm like, oh, come on, man. Really? Are you really talking to me like that? We have to acknowledge when racism happens. One time, there's a police commissioner across the street, San Francisco police commissioner, African-American woman who had been under Detroit police office for 20 years. And I said, oh, come on, Dolores, let's go get Gavin Newsom to move into our neighborhood because then we'll really be, the neighborhood will totally turn around. It'll be great. Get the mayor to move here. She goes, oh, my God, he wouldn't be safe here. And I'm like looking at her going, we live here.
And we're safe.
So exactly. And so you have to really acknowledge every day what happens. You know, you have to, when you're in a situation, really try and think about what's going on and how it's being played. And people are unconscious about their racism. Sometimes they're conscious about their racism, but we have to be engaged. We have to take stands. We have to talk about it.
And Mumia continues to speak from behind bars and talk about the issue of people being poisoned, a captive population being literally poisoned, because that is the way that our culture and our economy is set up. Noel, I want to thank you very much for that. I am so grateful to you for all the work that you do and your insight and your strength and your courage. Just before we let you go, though, can you get our listeners know, if they don't already know, how to access these talks by Maria, how they can access, how they could support the work that you do?
Go to www.prisonradio.org. Mumia puts out commentaries twice a week. They're always really interesting, really exciting. And if you supported us and became members, hey, man, you would exactly help getting these out every week. We just do it on a shoestring. Everybody really matters to us. And we send you out great stuff, postcards, posters. You know, we have great gear just so we can keep the message going.
And keep the voice loud and clear and strong. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Noel Hanrahan with the Prison Radio Project. This has been Cascadia for Tuesday, September 16th, 2014. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, we continue our groundbreaking investigation into the Lyme disease epidemic with a hard-hitting three-part series about the failure of government agencies to address the health crisis, the widespread underreporting of the epidemic, and a new kind of activism that's emerging from sick patients who have been disabled by the disease. Also, we'll be joined by Barbara Lubin of the Middle East Children's Alliance for an update on Gaza. I'm Dennis Burns, seeing all this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening.